population density is approximately 67,000 people per square mile, more than 800 times that of the nation as a whole. But despite the smoke, the smog, the trash, the crowds, and gridlock, David Owen claims urban areas like New York are actually the greenest communities in the country. Mr. Owen has been a staff writer at The New Yorker since 1991. He's also the author of a dozen books, and he was on our show last month to discuss his most recent one, Green Metropolis: Why Living Smaller, Living Closer, and Driving Less Are the Keys to Sustainability. I began by asking David Owen, do environmentalists have it completely wrong when they think of large cities as environmental catastrophes?
I think many do think that, and they are wrong. And certainly in the popular conception, you look at a place like New York City and you think, oh, smoke and garbage and taxi cabs and traffic congestion. It looks like an environmental disaster. But New Yorkers actually have the smallest carbon footprints of any Americans. They are the they have the lowest energy consumption per capita of any Americans. And they have much to be proud of. I think all these kinds of statistics surprise even New Yorkers.
But well, is this unique to New York? For example, Las Vegas has often been called an environmental freeloader. That's a city.
Right, it's a
with
city.
A lot of population density.
No, it's – well, a lot of
Los
population
Angeles.
Density on the Strip.
Uh-huh.
What it takes is – I think the key is distance between people and their destinations. When you move people close to other people and close to the places where they go, then they necessarily – they just by automatically do things that are greener. They live in smaller spaces. Because they live in smaller spaces, they consume less energy and heat and cooling. They own fewer things. They throw away fewer things. And they don't – and the key, they don't have cars.
So it's the older cities, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago.
And it's the hearts of those cities. And then also it's what makes the old European cities greener. They were cities that were laid out before the internal combustion engine.
It seems like a lot of what you argue in the book is that New York City and its inhabitants are environmentally responsible, at least have a sense of responsibility, but the rest of the world just doesn't realize it.
Well, New Yorkers don't realize it either. And I think the great thing about population density is that it doesn't require a commitment to greenness to shrink your footprint. I was explaining the thesis of the book to somebody at a conference. He goes, but it's all unconscious. And I think that's a great thing. It's what we need is
unconscious worse. Does that somehow make it?
I think
less
it makes
true.
I think it makes it seem like cheating, but it's really you want green results that you don't have to enforce with policy. New Yorker, it's hard to, I think New York City is one of the very few places in the United States where you might hear somebody say, "We don't have time to drive. We better take the train." And across the rest of the country, New Yorkers, 77% of Manhattan households don't own even one car. And those that do have them barely use them. In the rest of the country, we now have more registered automobiles than we have licensed drivers.
In most parts of New York City, people who have cars are just simply driving them to the other side for alternate side of the street parking.
Right.
But
it consumes about 50% of their brain power to do that.
Talking about the cheating, whenever I've spoken to people about why we see less obesity in New York than in other cities, including I remember being horrified in Pittsburgh, they say, well, it's because New Yorkers tend to walk to places as though that was an excuse.
Right, right. No, it's very true. I guess you could argue that people who like to walk, or, sort of type A ectomorphs are attracted to life in the city. But it's if you want to see people outside moving around under their own power, don't go to the country. Don't go to a suburb. In a suburb, you can go travel for miles through a typical American suburb and not see anybody outside walking unless they're moving between a building and a vehicle or trying to lose weight.
So with this in mind, how do we explain the fact that it says right on the cover of your book that you live in Northwest Connecticut?
Well, it's extraordinarily appealing, and this is a great conundrum. How do we, if it is true that the way to shrink the environmental impact of people is to shrink the spaces between them, what do we do as a society to keep the incentives from pushing them in the other direction? In the United States, especially, all the incentives are in favor of spreading out. Making space between ourselves. We build the roads that move people into distant suburbs.
And people want that space.
And they want it. I think especially, I think my case was completely typical. It was when I first began to think about this. My wife and I lived in New York City for 7 years. It's a great place to live when you're young and you don't have any money because there's a million things going on. And then we had a child. And when she got to be one, we began to think, we don't want to raise our daughter in this big city. We need to get some space. And so we moved 100 miles away to the country. I think that for that reason, if you accept the idea that population density has environmental value, then when you look at a place like New York or a dense urban core like downtown Boston or San Francisco, then the critical environmental issues become things like education. How do we keep people from thinking that they have to flee the moment they have a
family? Well, the schools are better often in the suburbs, aren't they?
They are. It's a strong pull, and there's a tremendous value to having a backyard. So it becomes things like recreation, education, the smell of the street, the noise, all these are all environmental issues because they affect where people are willing to live.
But you categorize your move to Connecticut as an ecological catastrophe.
Absolutely. And it was thinking about that after we had done it that made me begin to think about this issue. When we lived in New York, we lived in about 750 square feet. We didn't have a car. We didn't have a washer. When we we did our shopping on foot. When we moved to the country, we immediately bought a car. Then we realized that if you have one car, you can't pick up your car when it's at the mechanic. So we instantly got a second car. We eventually ended up with a third car as a result of a mild midlife crisis on my part. And then it became a necessity when our kids got to be old enough to drive. I think when people who live in this city imagine life in the country, they picture, you know, sort of kayaking and going for long walks through the woods. What you really do when you move to the country is move into a car because you can't walk anywhere.
Well, I've been many times traveling through the country and seen apartment houses and had somebody in the car say, why would you move here to live in an apartment house?
Well, that's probably a good question. It's from an environmental point of view, it's if we want public transit to work, if we want to shrink energy consumption, we have to create incentives that cause the population growth to take place in the places that give us the most environmental benefit, which is in dense urban cores, and to discourage it in the places that have got us into trouble. Metropolitan Atlanta covers more square miles than the entire state of Connecticut. To get from one side of it to the other is like an all-day operation, and there's a tremendous amount of waste, and it's because the population is so spread out, it could never be served by an effective public transit system. To make transit work, and then especially to make walking a viable means of getting around, people have to be close together. New York City is really is one of the very, very few places in the United States for a large percentage of the population, walking is a primary mode of transportation.
Well, there was a time when people were moving out of big cities and New York City in huge numbers, and then they started moving back, and we got all sorts of reasons. Well, their kids grew up, and now they didn't need the big house. Many people said that they missed the cultural institutions. They were driving to New York a lot to see a decent movie or go to a museum or go to the opera or theater, and so it just made more sense for them to come back. According to your argument, everybody should be moving to urban areas.
Well,
other than people who are going to grow out food on farms,
right? I think that if you look at you're right when you talk about the my kids now are in their 20s. They live in Manhattan. They live in apartments that are smaller than their childhood bedrooms, just about, and they love it because there's something going on all the time. Then when you get to the other end of the age spectrum, my mother, who's in her early 80s, she lives in an assisted care facility. She still has a car, but she doesn't use it very often. Her friends are down the hall. She can walk to eat. Those two age groups live with very small energy and carbon footprints. It's this big group in the middle that I'm now aging out of, that where we have the biggest challenge.
Well, you write for a living. You don't have to commute. You can just go into another room.
And then you can
email everything as a document to your editors at The New Yorker.
That's right. And that's what I do. So my commute involves going down a flight of stairs, and yet my wife does the same. Yet we still manage to put an extraordinary number of miles on our cars every year.
My guest is David Owen, whose latest book is Green Metropolis: Why Living Smaller, Living Closer, and Driving Less Are the Keys to Sustainability. It's published by Riverhead Books. So, is New York the greenest community in the United States?
Yes, I think so. And if you by all these measures, energy use per capita, by oil use per capita, by water use per capita, New Yorkers use very little. I think a visitor's perception of New York City is often of trash on the sidewalks. New Yorkers actually produce less solid waste than the average American, including the average Vermonter.
Well, the big difference is the Vermonter has to take that trash, put it in the trunk of the car, and drive to some place and drop it off.
That's right.
In New York, we put it out for the garbage collector.
It's not very efficient, the Vermonter. And I think we tend to think when we spread out, it makes our environmental consequences harder to see and therefore harder to do something about. If you took the 8.3 million residents of New York City and you spread them out at the density of Vermont, you would need a space equivalent to the six New England states plus Maryland, Virginia, New Jersey, and Delaware. You'd have to find something to do with all those people.
So is a major part of the problem reversing that trend toward urban sprawl?
Well, it is a problem. And I was saying to someone, I said it's been clear for some time that there are no easy answers to these issues. I think the worry increasingly is that there aren't any hard answers either. It's a tremendous challenge. And if you succeed in making cities more attractive, what do you do to the people who then price out of the urban areas where they now live?
Let's take a little break and we'll come back with more David Owen, his book, Green Metropolis. We're back with a conversation I had with David Owen in November. He's a staff writer for The New Yorker and the author of a dozen books. He was here to discuss his latest, Green Metropolis: Why Living Smaller, Living Closer, and Driving Less Are the Keys to Sustainability. One of the things I asked him was, is sustainable living easier in cities than in rural areas?
Yes. It doesn't feel that way, but it is. And I think if we look at, for example, New York City, which is an environmental villain in the minds of many people.
Well, people think that we're creating all these greenhouse gases, aren't
right.
we?
Right. Not on a per capita basis. If you look at it by square foot, New York is a disaster. But if you flip it around and look by household or by individual, it's the greenest place in the state. New Yorkers drive less, they consume less energy, they consume less water.
Why do we consume? Because we don't water our lawns?
No lawns to water, no swimming pools to fill, and just not as many water-consuming appliances. People who live in Manhattan apartments don't have two refrigerators in the kitchen and a third one in the basement and a fourth one in the garage. The living in small spaces forces all these good things that we want people to do that are hard to do simply through moral suasion. The New York City metropolitan area has about a third of all the public transit passenger miles in the United States. New York City itself has half of all the subway stops in the United States.
Half of them.
In order to make
that's even counting Chicago and Boston.
Every place. And the reason is that in order to make transit work, to make it work in any sense, people have to be close enough together and close enough to their destinations. To make it feasible, and they also have to have something that I think an underappreciated green asset of New York City is the extraordinary difficulty of driving in Manhattan. Traffic congestion has environmental value. It makes you hate to drive, and many of the green initiatives we see in other parts of the country are actually they're really aimed at improving the lives of drivers, which to eliminate the traffic jams, which is what drivers want.
But you point out that there are ways in which the city is laid out that work against pedestrians in some cases, encourages them to be less environmentally friendly by taking buses or cabs because the crosstown streets are so long.
Yeah, for much of New York is, I mean, it's a wonderful place to walk around. It's like walking on a map because you you know where you are and you can tell, you can orient yourself. But there are the crosstown blocks, the between the avenues, are tend to be too long. I think longtime New York natives, that you find the shortcuts, you find the buildings that you can go through. But for the most part, in comparison with other American cities, New York City is a great pedestrian city.
Now, we've been talking about New York City. Are other cities around the world environmentally conscious? Some of the older European cities, Hong Kong or Singapore?
Hong Kong is probably the global ideal for, in terms of demonstrating the benefits of moving people and their destinations closer together.
But that's because they have so many high-rise.
So many high-rise. You stack people up instead of spreading them out. And they also have a good transit system. And Hong Kong, like Manhattan, and this is a key, it's also on an island, both physically and geopolitically. And when San Francisco is on, you know, three-quarters of an island, the same with downtown Boston, they're the places that are where you have the highest transit use, the lowest per capita energy use, tend to be places where there is some physical constraint to outward growth. Where I grew up in Kansas City, there's pretty much nothing. There are no barriers between downtown Kansas City and the Gulf of Mexico. The city just is spreading like a bucket of water on your basement floor. And Kansas City, I think the Sierra Club calculated that it has more highway miles per capita than any place in the country. That's where the waste is.
The BP spill endangering Kansas City, that would be kind of scary, yeah, wouldn't
that's
it?
That's right. The BP spill, incidentally, it gave people nightmares. That we use as much, the amount of oil that was spilling from the BP site in the Gulf of Mexico every day, we use every 2 minutes in the United States. The real disaster with oil is what we don't spill. It's what we burn.
We've had a debate over just how much recycling we should do in this city. Do we do more recycling than people in rural areas?
Well, I think recycling is a tricky issue, and it's not clear always that we gain from recycling. Often, recycling just adds one more stop on the way to the dump and to a landfill. We really need to be, producing and throwing away and recycling less stuff. There's a kind of a perverse sort of glow of satisfaction that you get by creating the biggest possible pile of recycling, when in fact the ideal recycling pile would have nothing in it because you wouldn't have anything that you were throwing away.
There was a time when it looked like New York would have more highways. Robert Moses was pushing for a highway through downtown Manhattan, through what is now remains Soho. And we still have had some highway projects. But aren't they good? Isn't the FDR Drive a good idea? Isn't the West Side Highway a good idea?
Well, making it easier to drive in the long run is not a good idea. And certainly, I think Manhattanites are pleased that Washington Square Park is still there and not under pavement, under Robert Moses pavement. Almost all the infrastructure projects that we engage in the United States are aimed at making life easier for drivers. They're facilitating driving. We just recently in Connecticut, the state of Connecticut spent a huge amount of money to create a little stretch of four-lane to shorten the commuting time from going north. And the ultimate result of that is that although traffic congestion is relieved in the short term, in the long term, we get more cars. It's what traffic engineers call induced traffic. If you add capacity, you end up with more drivers because cars rush in to fill the void.
But when Congress is asked to fund mass transit programs, they tend instead to think in terms of highways, don't they?
Yes.
Because New York is a unique place, and because everybody hates New York and
right.
The rest of the country?
No, they definitely do. And you can see in a place like Washington, D.C., for example, which has a wonderful subway system. It's clean. It's quiet. It runs beautifully, and yet if you're in D.C., you feel no obligation to use it because you can always get where you're going by car. And so it's the other side of the equation that people aren't really interested in.
What about the environmentally friendly buildings that we've been seeing? The whole LEED certified program.
I think they reward a kind of wasteful consumption that. that misses the point. Any building in New York City, any tall building in New York City, is greener than almost any LEED certified building anywhere else, simply because the people who work in it don't drive there in the morning. When they go to lunch, they walk. When they go home, they walk. The New York City is the Condé Nast building where the New Yorker is headquartered. It's a 1.6 million square foot building. It doesn't have a parking lot. That's unheard of in the rest of the United States. If the World Trade Center had been built according to the zoning regulations that were in effect in my little town at the time, there would have had to be eight towers, and six of them would have just been cars, parking lots, because we build around cars. And so LEED misses the point, I think.
But, for example, when I walk out of my office, after a few minutes, the lights go off. Isn't that a good thing?
Oh, yeah, it is a good – I think those are good things. In the long run, the biggest differences are the structural differences, the making people live in ways where they don't even think about things like that.
Now, there has been a debate even recently over whether we should put tolls on the river bridges or whether we should have congestion pricing to cut down on automobiles in the center of town. And people scream bloody murder. So New Yorkers don't really appreciate what you're talking about?
No, not at all. They definitely don't, especially the state legislature. But I pushed contrarianism over the limits of rationality. I wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal arguing in favor of traffic congestion. As I say, it's what makes you take the subway. It's also the fact that in New York City, traffic that moves 1 mile an hour on the side street, that's what makes it possible to be a pedestrian. You can weave through the cars. Jaywalking is a very green activity.
And it's always fun to beat a car down the street.
Yes.
David Owen's latest book is Green Metropolis, Why Living Smaller, Living Closer, and Driving Less Are the Keys to Sustainability. It's published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
On Monday's show, find out how the conflicting impulses of cautious saving and lavish spending have shaped American ideas about money. Then W.S. Merwin, one of America's greatest living poets, discusses his new volume of collected poems, The Shadow of Sirius. And Constance Rosenblum, the former editor of the City section of the New York Times, shares 50 quintessentially New York stories. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Andrew Katchen, Angela Sheldon, Jessica Ramey, and contributing producer Fran Jacobs. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2011.